This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Newt Gingrich's thinking about America's future has been influenced by the work of futurists Alvin and Heidi Toffler. In fact, Gingrich wrote the introduction to their new book, Creating a New Civilization, The Politics of the Third Wave, and he's recommended that members of Congress read it. This book continues the themes that the Tofflers first stated in their books, Future Shock and the Third Wave. According to the Tofflers, the human race has undergone two great waves of change. The first was the agricultural revolution that made farming possible. The second was the industrial revolution. Now we're making the transition into the third wave, the information age. And this third wave is changing everything from politics to the family. But the Tofflers think politicians on the whole have been slow in catching on. They say both parties are obsolete, stuck in industrial-era thinking. I asked what advice they've given Newt Gingrich on how to bring Congress into the third wave.
Well, you have to understand that Heidi and I met Newt long before he was in Congress. He was a young teaching assistant when we first met him back in the early 70s. So we've been friends with Newt Gingrich independently of politics for a long, long time. And we have a very exciting intellectual relationship. When we meet with him, we argue, we fight, we fuss. And so we don't have a formal relationship either with Newt or with the Republican Party or anywhere. We're not Republicans. We're not Democrats. We are intellectuals. We write. And we have ideas. He finds many of those ideas useful and I think understands many of them more deeply than most politicians do. By the same token, we find some of his ideas repulsive. Tell him what he originally said years ago.
He's always been aware of disagreements, and when we first met him, he said, you're going to agree with maybe 80% of what I say and violently disagree with 20%.
So Newt Gingrich says you disagree with about 20% of what he puts forward. So what are some of the issues in that 20%?
The separation of church and state, the issue of choice.
Abortion and choice. Yeah. And there are plenty of things that we would
and,
argue about.
And something that that Newt and this is the conservative coalition faction of the Republican Party.
Christian
coalition. The whole emphasis on family values. My question always is whose family's values? One family may have a very different set of values than another one.
We would argue and do argue in all of our work that what's happening with the rise of a third wave is what we call the demassification of society, including family structure. And what that means is the industrial age was based on mass production, mass distribution, mass consumption, mass education, mass recreation, mass media, and sometimes weapons of mass destruction. The sociologists taught us that industrialism gave rise to mass societies which were essentially homogeneous. They emphasized uniformity and homogeneity.
Exactly.
Heidi's right. What you had was the assumption that everybody has to grow up into a nuclear family with a father who goes to work, a mother who stays home, and 1.8 kids or whatever, and that this was eternal, universal, and the standard form. What's happened, as in fact we foreshadowed in Future Shock in 25, 30 years ago, we had a chapter in that called The Fractured Family, in which we said that we're moving into a period of high diversity and we're going to see many different family structures, not just a single model for the whole society. And that, I think, is exactly what has happened. And I believe that the family values folks who reflect honest and genuine feelings and ought to be respected for their views, despite the fanaticism of a few of them, nevertheless have a unitary, a kind of homogeneous view of what family life ought to be. We differ with that.
Well, in Future Shock, you predicted that the family may fall apart, but it would come together in new ways. You predicted there would be more childless marriages, more older people raising children, gays adopting babies, polygamy, temporary marriages, marriages that assume that as each member of the couple changed, the relationship would be likely to change as well and might in fact end.
Has it happened?
Well, wait, yeah. Well, don't you think it has?
I think it's happened right on target.
Absolutely. But we said serial polygamy, which is not having several wives at the same time, but having very
sequential marriages.
Which has happened also.
To have said that does not necessarily mean that we endorse it, that it's a wonderful thing. It's a painful, traumatic change when a family, when a society's family structure undergoes change. It's painful, it's bitter, it's agonizing.
How would you say your view of the family compares to Newt Gingrich's?
Well, I think Newt probably has a less relaxed view of the changes that are taking place, so to speak. I think he would agree with returning function. Let me give you an example. By the way, I don't think that we should be measured by the Newtometer. We have written these books for millions of people around the world who've read them, and Newt Gingrich, who is a pal, finds the ideas stimulating and valuable. That's fine. But I don't think that everything we do has to be measured by a Gingrich metric. I think that I'll give you an example. The movement of work back into the home, which we have encouraged and written about for many, many years. We're with people who are finding ways of using their PCs or their faxes, and sometimes without technology, to work at home. We think that's a pretty good thing. At least not for everybody, but for a lot of people. If you look at the society, what stands in the way of doing that? Well, you got giant corporations who want to keep their workers under total supervision every moment. They don't like it. But also the IRS doesn't like it. And the trade unions hate it. Newt Gingrich wants it. He favors the return of work or making it easier for people to work at home. That's a third wave policy in our judgment.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Alvin and Heidi Toffler. They've written a new book called Creating a New Civilization, The Politics of the Third Wave. And I should mention, if Heidi's speaking a little bit less, it's because she has laryngitis. You know what I'd like to do? I'd like you to apply your thinking about the information age to one of the big debates now in the political system, which is about welfare. And I've chosen welfare not only because it's one of the big controversies of the moment, but also it says something about employment and unemployment.
Sure.
And the way money should be used. And these are all issues that you cover in one way or another in spelling out your philosophy. So do you see the welfare system as being a remnant of the industrial era?
I think the way the welfare system is organized is indeed a product of the second wave industrial era. The industrial society presumes that work is essentially interchangeable. It's based on muscle power.
But it's not that way anymore.
No, that's the big change. You have to understand
that.
Well,
those jobs are going out of the country. They're going to developing countries.
So what does that say about how unemployment today is different from unemployment in the industrial era?
Bravo.
Yes.
Okay, here is how. In a second wave society, if you have unemployment, we learned more or less what to do about it. From the experience of the Great Depression, economists like Keynes and monetarist economists taught us that if you have a million workers unemployed, you could stimulate the economy by manipulating interest rates or by putting purchasing power back in the hands of the public and so forth and so on. You could stimulate the economy and create a million jobs. Then the million unemployed take the million jobs, and presto, they have resolved the unemployment problem. That's a mechanistic industrial era approach to unemployment. It is second wave thinking properly applied to second wave employment.
You didn't have to educate people any differently.
Now you've got a million people unemployed. Let's say you do that. Let's say you lower the interest rates, and let's say that even works to stimulate the economy, and you go through all those games, you stimulate the economy, and you actually create 5 million new jobs. But these million people can't do those 5 million jobs.
Because they're not trained for
those
jobs.
Because work is not any longer as interchangeable.
Let me get this back to welfare. What you're saying is that the whole job situation has changed. You need more specialized, high-tech type of skills than you needed in the days of factories.
No, not necessarily high-tech, but you need skills.
Also specialized.
You
okay.
also need a lot of service workers.
Okay.
And you don't have to be a rocket scientist to be a service worker.
Good. Let's take this back to welfare and apply what you're saying to how you think welfare should be reformed or eliminated or whatever you think.
Mm-hmm. I confess, I don't have Heidi and I don't have a magic plan to solve this problem. However, the existing assumptions under which the welfare system was laid in place originally is that people are more or less alike. And what we think that the fervor, the anger at the welfare system, which is by no means limited to whites or angry white males, that's baloney. I've talked with plenty of blacks who despise the welfare system far more militantly than many liberal whites, that the welfare system clearly has not created, as we have moved into the third wave, we created more and more unemployment among those without skills. The welfare system hasn't addressed that problem at all. The welfare system, in fact, has simply
failed in every respect, except perpetuating itself.
Yeah. So it's time to shake it up and rethink it.
Let me ask you a fundamental question. What responsibility, if any, do you think the government should have?
Which government?
The government of the United States? Oh, you mean federal or state?
Exactly. Exactly. One of the great arguments, one of the great things about America has been that it's been less centralized than France, less centralized than Japan, less centralized than most other industrial countries.
But more bureaucratic.
So you think it's a smart idea to have the states assume some of the responsibility?
Indeed. And the phrase used to be that the states are potentially the laboratory of democracy, that they could do different things and see what works. The other thing is that we believe, and there are many people who surely differ with us, but we believe the United States is the parts of the United States, the regions of the United States, are growing less alike. They're becoming heterogeneous rather than homogeneous. And the consequence of that is what works in one place won't necessarily work in another. And our welfare policy, as well as our, I must say, our Federal Reserve policies, a lot of our policies, assume that you can turn a magic switch in Washington and you'll provide medicine for everybody. That's not the way it's working now.
Okay, so because we're becoming more heterogeneous, that the state should have responsibility, you think, for creating welfare programs. Should any part of government have responsibility for helping out people who are perhaps trapped between that second and mm-hmm. third wave, people who aren't prepared for the jobs that exist now?
I think that, yes, government does have some responsibility to help. After all, a lot of these people are not in a bad situation because of their own doing. The society is changing. The structure of society is changing. And therefore, we need to be aware of that. And, you know, Heidi and I have been writing about this stuff for 30 years, but nobody and urging people to think about these problems so that they would not hit as they have, in fact, hit. Nobody paid much attention to that. And nobody took advance action to prevent it. So here we are. And I think, yes, government has some responsibility for people who are not capable of doing things on their own. There are millions of handicapped people in the society. There are millions of people who, for one reason or another, are not capable of having jobs, even if the jobs are available. And there is a certain residual amount of responsibility that government has. But that does not necessarily have to be Uncle Sam. What Uncle Sam, it seems to me, has to do is to assure that at the lower levels of government in the states and in the cities, that the return of power to them does not allow them to become local tyrannies. That simply shifting power downward, which is what Newt and the Republicans are eager to do, needs to be accompanied by something that the Democrats ought to be doing. The Democrats ought to be saying, yes, we agree with you. We want to shift the power downward, although the Democrats have a hard time saying that because of their constituencies. We want to shift that power downward, but we also want to guarantee that when it gets down there, states' rights does not become a euphemism for racism as it was before. I frankly don't think it will, because you now have blacks voting, you now have black officials, you now have minorities participating in ways that were not the case 50 years ago. But nevertheless, I would like to see devolution downward plus additional strengthened federal insistence that we observe our Constitution.
My guests are futurists Alvin and Heidi Toffler. They've written a new book called Creating a New Civilization, The Politics of the Third Wave. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Alvin and Heidi Toffler are my guests. They have a new book called Creating a New Civilization, The Politics of the Third Wave. In part because Newt Gingrich has read a lot of your work and advised others to do the same. I've asked you your thoughts about him. Let me ask you your thoughts about Al Gore, who's probably the Democrat who's had the most to say about the internet and the information age. What's your assessment?
Well, before we do that, Newt Gingrich also wrote the introduction to this book.
Good point. Yes, he did.
Yeah, yeah. I think Gore... and I think Heidi would agree with this. Gore is a highly intelligent guy. He has been aware of this. He was co-chair of the Congressional Clearinghouse on the Future, which is an institution which we helped set up in 1975 to get Congress and members of the Congress thinking more about the future. So he's thought about this a long time.
And his reinventing government.
However, and his reinventing government initiative is good. But if you look closely, the problem is not Al Gore. The problem are the constituencies that trap the Democratic Party and make it impossible for Gore to carry out what he wants to do. So that reinventing government is good, but it's just nibbling at the edges of the problem, because every time you try to change the institution, whether it's housing or health or any one of the government bureaucracies, you're up against the very voters who the Democrats require to get elected.
Now, you both not only have information age credentials, you have industrial credentials. You've both worked in factories. Heidi, you used to be with United Auto Workers. Do you think we're in a transition now? Factories are no longer, you know, as big a source of employment as they once were. Labor unions have changed, and a lot of people at work no longer have labor unions, and they no longer have the kind of benefits that the unions fought for and provided, health insurance, pensions. And so a lot of people would you say a lot of people are kind of trapped between the second and third wave right now, the industrial and the information era, and they don't have.
You're dead on. That's exactly the way to describe it. Yes, we have one system phasing out, another system phasing in, and by no means yet fully understood, and all the necessary changes and adaptations and institutions have not been invented. And people are caught in this process, which is what happens in history. I don't mean to be at all callous about it, but when the Industrial Revolution came, it was a massively painful process for societies, because the old ways of life fell apart. Everybody could look around and say, my God, it doesn't work anymore.
And most people couldn't imagine being anything but a farmer.
Heidi's absolutely right. Think about somebody sitting here 300 years ago and having a discussion about the economy of the future, and somebody saying, well, there's going to be some strange new economy out there that's different from the one we have. And the other person, reflecting the conventional wisdom of the age, says, what? A society? Can you have a society in which 90% of the people are not peasants? Because that's the way life was for all those years. So it's hard to imagine.
As we continue the transition into, you know, the information age, some people are clearly winners. They have the good jobs. They're on the internet. Life is more exciting. They have opportunities. Some people are losers. They don't have the education. They don't have the skills. They don't have the jobs.
They don't have the motivation.
Some. Okay.
Some.
Is there a way that... we as a culture, we as a society can help the people who are getting lost? Yeah. Or do you expect that we're going to become a more divided nation between the haves and have-nots as we get deeper into the information?
Well, that clearly is possible, but it's not inevitable. When Newt Gingrich said, we ought to provide a laptop for every kid in the underclass, everybody laughed at him. And of course, he said maybe that was a silly idea. But in fact, that is... not stupid, not doing it that way. But if you want the children, the upcoming children of this generation, whether they're black or white or Latino or Asian or whatever, to be part of it, you've got to educate them in totally new ways. The public school system is a disaster. And what you therefore have to do is have an education which provides computer literacy, media literacy, as well as traditional literacy. And you've got to totally restructure and reorganize that. That's something that I think Gingrich understands. That is something that is very and the Democrats understand it, some of them, but it's very difficult for them to do it.
How has Newt Gingrich's public mentions of your work changed your lives?
Well, what it's done is it's brought an avalanche of media attention, much of it trivial, but not all. And it hasn't changed our lives in any substantive way. We are what we were before. We are writers. We think of ourselves as thinking individuals. We're trying to make sense of a very complex pattern of change and to help other people understand it. That's what we devote our lives to.
And we're getting a lot more feedback now.
Yeah, an enormous amount.
More people are paying attention to the ideas, I think, because of Newt Gingrich.
Is it ever hard for you to publicly disagree with him because he speaks so highly of you?
Why? We disagree with him publicly right here anytime on all kinds of issues, like, as Heidi pointed out at the very start of the show, we believe in choice. We believe in a sharp separation of church and state. We believe that prayer in the schools is not a wonderful idea. Et cetera, et cetera. We say these things. We say them out loud. We say them repeatedly. And we also say something that's never reported or seldom reported, and that is that we also meet with Democrats in politics and tell them exactly the same things. But the focus is on Newt because he is such a charismatic figure and because he literally holds up our books and says,
get out there and read it. But more than that, he's a man who really has a vision. He's a visionary, and he wants to make true revolutionary change, and
that's the level of change that this country now requires. Not necessarily the specific changes that he wants, but an understanding that making a few incremental changes are not going to cut it over the next 10 or 20 years. We're going into a very turbulent period, not just domestically, but outside globally as well.
Elvin and Heidi Toffler. Their new book is called Creating a New Civilization, The Politics of the Third Wave. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.